From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. And it is great to be with you on the show on this spring Monday morning. Hope that you are having a fantastic spring day out there. And you are enjoying the weather is definitely spring-like. And I've definitely seen a few blossoms around and all the sorts of things that you would want to see for spring. And not only is it spring, but it is also Heritage Month. That's right. I think the 24th of September is Heritage Day. And so we're going to be doing a little bit of that on the show today. In a little while, we're going to be talking to Eric Ichtin. He is from the Johannesburg City of Johannesburg Heritage Directorate, and he's going to be talking to us about heritage and what does it mean, and how can we be part of it? Because heritage in the city is a huge deal, and we need to protect it, and we need to figure out, you know, what is Joburg all about, and how can we be part of interacting with it? Because, you know, Joburg is a very young city. It's not old by city standards, only from, I think, 1898, something like that. So it's fairly young. And does that mean that it doesn't have a heritage? Or maybe it does. I don't know. We'll be finding out from Eric about that. And, you know, just seeing what it is that is happening around the city in terms of heritage, because he is part of that. And you know, we're going to be chatting about this and seeing where we can play our part, really, as citizens of the city and people who are part of part of the city and wanting to engage with it in ways that are fun and interesting and educational. And certainly September is quite a good time for that. You know, Joburg gets a little bit, starts getting going from August again, but really sort of September, October, November time, it doesn't rain too heavily and it's not so cold and people are outside. And so it would be great to find out what else is there out there. And I think Eric will have some input there. Also going to be talking about a few other issues on the show today. As you can hear from George, our AI, very interesting story about that Finnish swastika issue. he didn't really go into the story, but I suspect that part of the reason why was that the Finns sort of played both sides in the Second World War, right? Because if you know anything about Finland, they actually they're on the border of Russia, and so when there was this pact that was made, I think between the Nazis and the Soviets, the Soviets invaded a number of countries. They cut Poland in half. They took over a bunch of other places, but it also meant that the Soviets invaded Finland. Now, Finland has this long border with Russia, going all the way up, and it's very sort of undefendable. But at the same time, they also had a lot of access to good kind of partisan units, people who could like walk in the snow and hide and whatever. And so they actually gave the Soviets a really hard time in the war. And although I think the Soviets eventually did sort of take over in some way, shape, or form, there was still some measure of it wasn't like the Finnish resistance was completely crushed. But then at the same time, as the war wore on, of course, eventually Hitler did turn on the Soviets, and then there was an invasion. And so the Finns were part of the Nazi machine as it went forward back into Soviet Russia. So they ended up actually having units in Nazi Germany as part of the Nazis, but not necessarily because they agreed so much with them, so much as they wanted to get their they wanted to get their land back basically from the Soviets. So yeah, so that was the case there. And that's why it doesn't really surprise me that they actually still do have a swastika somewhere in their regalia in terms of the aeroplanes, because it would sort of actually make quite a lot of sense. Although I see AI George sort of had a different explanation, so it'd be interesting to find out a little bit more about what is going on, and see why they weren't to replace it, or what the actual background with that particular thing was. I see that from AI George that they want to replace it with a eagle and a blue sky, but that sounds pretty sort of Nazi a little bit to me as well. So I don't know, it's an interesting story. And one of the reasons why I'm actually mentioning it at all is that this year, of course, is the 80th anniversary of the end of World War II. And there's actually some commemorations that are starting to happen around that, because there's really not any sort of veterans left around World War II, but there are people who are still interested in it, and there are commemorations that are happening around this, which, of course, does talk to this issue of heritage. And I understand that in a couple of weeks, there's going to be one that is focusing on the Jewish heritage of those who fought from South Africa, South African Jews who fought in the South African Armed Forces and the British Armed Forces, Americans, to defeat the Nazis. So I think that is extremely interesting, and we'll definitely have to have people on to discuss that, so that we can understand, as also part of our heritage, this sort of military history. If you go to West Park Cemetery, for example, you'll see these new signs up that said that there's the Jewish War Memorial, and they've got their own space in the cemetery. Kind of, if you know the cemetery, you'll know the sort of the Holocaust Memorial. But sort of next door is the War Memorial, and they have for all the Jews who've died in wars, not just World War I and World War II, but all the other wars, particularly the 20th century, that people have sacrificed their lives often for freedom and democracy and the community. So it's a very interesting and something which we'll definitely be following on this Heritage Month. So yeah, that is your introduction to this question of heritage. But after the break, we're going to have a proper expert in Eric Itzkin. He's an official at the Director of Arts and Culture and Heritage for the City of Johannesburg, and we're going to be chatting to him right after the break.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM, and I'm happy to say that we're being joined today by Eric Itzkin. He is an official at the Director of Arts, Culture and Heritage for the City of Johannesburg, where he holds the position of Deputy Director of Immovable Heritage. And he has been described as an activist, an educator, and a walking encyclopedia with an extensive knowledge of the city's history. And he's also the author of a number of works, which include Gandhi's Johannesburg, the Indian War Memorial, National Memory and Selective Forgetting, and Falling Monuments, Reluctant Ruins. And we're talking to him because, of course, it is Heritage Month today. It starts off, and so no one could be better than to talk about this than Eric. Eric, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Benji, and morning to the listeners.
Yes, great to have you on. So, Eric, maybe let's just start you know, when sometimes people talk about heritage, mixes up with this idea of culture. Maybe people are not sure what heritage means when it comes to a city versus something else. So maybe give us, start off by, what are we talking about when we talk about heritage?
Okay, so heritage relates to legacy, what you want to keep maybe from earlier generations, great deeds, great achievements, special buildings, monuments, memorials. It's really about keeping memory alive, Benji. I think that's the essence. It's often about structures, but it can be intangible. So it's for us and for future generations to cherish, you know, things of special value from the past, things that connect us and inspire us, and it's our keepsakes as a collective.
So that's, I think, a great definition. I love that. It's things that you want to keep. Now, you know, when you're talking about solid structures, which is something that you were talking about, if you travel to maybe Europe or in Asia or South America, sometimes you have very, very old structures that are maybe half a millennium old or a millennium old, something like that. In general, a place like Johannesburg, even its call it pre-European history is fairly recent by those sorts of standards, as far as we can tell. But so when we're talking about Johannesburg as a city, what are the sort of things that we're kind of focusing in on as the history of the city that does contribute to the heritage?
Okay, so the first thing to say is that we do have relics that are pretty old, and the pre-colonial history does stretch back quite some way. So you will find Stone Age relics in Johannesburg. Melville copies would be an example. Iron Age material. So there were actually flourishing Sututswana settlements in the vicinity of Melville copies, Northcliff, Klipriviersburg, and actually a city, a massive complex place in Sakebosrand, just to the south of Joburg. So that's kind of a subject on its own. But Joburg, as we know, it's catapulted into existence, you know, with the world's greatest gold rush. 1886, you have people flooding in from around the subcontinent and much of the world, which is how a lot of us got here. And it develops incredibly fast. It had a kind of a telescoped development. So moving very quickly from a mining camp to a town to a metropolis within the space of a few generations. But that very kind of explosive and intense development gave rise to some magnificent kind of achievements in architecture and many other fields. So it may not be that old by some standards, but there's a lot to protect. And, you know, the issue with heritage is that if you let it go, it's gone forever. You're talking about, you know, unique and kind of irreplaceable resources. If you want to talk about old in Joburg, apart from, you know, this pre-colonial dimension, well, you have, for just as an example, our first monument, the Rankieslachter Beacon, which marks the tip of the Rankieslachter Triangle. It's on Boundary Road, just bordering Parktown and Berea, opposite the Berea Fire Station. So that's 1886. You know, you have the old jails at Conhill, which date from the 1890s. Lots of relics that are very precious and things spanning the whole development through the 20th century to date.
If you'd like to ask a question to Eric, please do let us know. If you've got anything that is heritage related, 061-895-1019. We're talking heritage today on Chai FM, and particularly as it relates to Johannesburg, and what is it that our city has to offer in terms of heritage, and how can we protect it, I think, crucially, which is also part of this particular conversation. Now, Eric, a little bit about the buildings, and I think that's fascinating. The jail cells, you know, as you say, are in Conhill, and they're actually very accessible, and you can go and see them. They're quite scary, actually. But that is a very accessible piece of heritage. What about stuff which is kind of more movable, more on, like, when we talk about heritage, we also talk about the cultural side, paintings, art, statues, that kind of thing. Does Johannesburg have a lot that has been produced in the way of that sort of thing as well?
So, you know, you might have museum collections, and we've got important institutions like Museum Africa, you know, as a cultural history museum with a lot of pictorial collections, photographs of the early city, paintings, and so on. Joburg Art Gallery has the most extensive collection in Africa. What I'm particularly focused on is immovable heritage. That's in my title. So statues and monuments are part of that, which do get moved actually from time to time, and there's some stories I could tell you there. But mostly they're fixed, they're site specific, and not that easy to relocate. And I suppose my work and interest is largely with sites of significance, so the actual places, and it's not only the structures, but it could be landscapes and, you know, the stories around particular places.
So the stories, I think, are as you say, particularly interesting, and we've seen a real attempt over time to try and commemorate certain kinds of places for the role that they played in South African history. And of course, South African history can be highly political. So we have these kind of quite interesting places. Mandela's law office, for example, is one where there's been a lot of work done. We mentioned Conhill. That's another one, which I always tell visitors that they should, if you're going to visit one place in Johannesburg, I think Constitution Hill is probably the one place that you should go if you're only going to go one place. But I'm quite interested in some of your work. As we talked about in the intro, Gandhi, you wrote about Gandhi, but also the Indian War Memorial. Perhaps you can talk to us a little bit about those elements, since that is, you know, part of what you have some background on.
No, sure. Okay, so with Gandhi, he had an incredible connection with Joburg. As background, he stayed in South Africa as a younger person for 21 years, and the last 10 years were in Joburg. Where he developed the key tenets of his satyagraha philosophy, this nonviolent ideal, you know, of resisting injustice, which he championed here and carried back to India, and it became a great motor force for anti-colonial struggles, of course, in India, but internationally, had a deep influence on the South African liberation struggle as well. You know, for example, the Defiance campaign of 1952, which was led by Nelson Mandela as the volunteer in chief, was directly inspired by Gandhi's struggle. So there are a number of sites that one can visit connected directly with Gandhi. You were talking Conhill, the number 4 prison, the old native jail, which is just to the north of the fort as you go sort of down the slope. You had, really brutal conditions in communal cells, and that's where Gandhi served his first 2 periods of imprisonment. There's a house of his in Orchards, which is now operated as a guest house. It's called Satyagraha House, which he shared with his closest friend Kallenbach, and he had a whole number of Jewish friends and associates, which is another point of interest. So then, just coming to your question about the Indian monument. So that's not so well known, but really important in military history. So in the Second Anglo-Boer War, 1899 to 1902. You had Indian auxiliaries serving, in giving support services. Like there were stretcher bearers who were under the were a corps actually raised by Gandhi in support of the British war effort, although he didn't agree with what the British were doing. He did that. So that quite a few people are aware of. But what's not so well known at all is that there were many, many thousands of Indian men brought out by the British in support of the war effort as non-combatants, and a lot of them were stationed in what's Joburg now, looking after the cavalry, which was, at the heart of the military in those days. So you had what they called veterinary assistants, and people who shooed the horses and so on and so on. Anyway, that there's this monument which is unique here in South Africa and in the world. It's on Observatory Ridge, and it commemorates Indian soldiers who died here during that Anglo-Boer War. And it's pretty special that men of color were commemorated at all. Given the time, the prejudices of the time, it's one of a kind, and it kind of overlooks this remount camp where thousands of horses were sheltered in actually what's now Bezuidenhout Park. So
that's absolutely fascinating, and of horses of all things that have also got their own monument here in Johannesburg. Eric, I want to ask you about this. We've had messages in from people saying similar sorts of things around the question of, Johannesburg is Has some issues around neglect, I think, at the moment. There's a lot of debate around that at the moment. And how does that affect the question of heritage, especially because those heritage spaces might be in places that are, may also be having economic issues at the same time?
Yeah, so poverty and neglect, abandoned buildings, hijacked buildings, all of those, pose a dire kind of threat at times. And particularly where, where you're talking about the inner city, where you've seen decay and capital flight in some instances. There are also, on the other hand, efforts to regenerate some of the important buildings, and to give them a new lease of life, preserve their heritage. So maybe I can just mention one or two of the public buildings that are, I think, on the way up. The public library, which celebrates its 90th anniversary, that particular building on Bayes Nodier Square, a very grand civic building, was closed for many years, for a number of years since COVID, and just in recent weeks has fully reopened, been, restored and given building compliance, which was lacking before. Just early on, you mentioned the offices of Mandela and Oliver Tambo in Ferreira's Town. It's a place called Chancellor House. Chancellor House, many years ago, was in a dire state, with many, many squatters in the early 2000s, and it was pretty much a burnt-out shell. The building was reclaimed by the city in 2011 and restored, but for years and years not given an active use. It's now being attended to bring it to a usable state, and it will be accessible certainly next year. So I think that those are landmark buildings, which are showing progress and promise.
We're just going to take a short break, but when we come back, I actually want to talk about the directory that you've been working on, so that people can actually see all of the different heritage spaces in Johannesburg, because I actually think it helps to really give you a sense about what is out there. We're talking to Eric Eckstein. He is a heritage activist, an educator, and an author, and he works for the City of Johannesburg's Heritage Directorate. You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and let's keep talking heritage in this Heritage Month.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM, I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. We're talking to Eric Eckstein today, and we're talking about heritage. And before we get back into the conversation, I did want to let you know, and indeed we are talking to Eric about heritage in this Heritage Month. And Eric, perhaps you can tell us about this project that has been started to really catalogue and make accessible the city's heritage spaces.
Okay, great. So, Benji, what it is an online register of heritage sites and buildings, which was launched on 18 July this year, which was Mandela Day. And it contains a wealth of information that has never before been, publicly accessible like this. So some of the sites I've mentioned would be there, like Chancellor House, Satyagraha House. I want to mention also Temple Israel, the founding Reform Synagogue in Hillbrow, which is wonderfully preserved thanks to Reva Foreman and some very committed people. So that register kind of helps to answer questions, I guess, about what constitutes our heritage. It's never going to be complete and comprehensive with everything. It's an ongoing mission. But it does give you a real spread and diversity of, many amazing sites, too many to mention, and people should search and do a deep dive and see, what interests them. It's searchable, by area, subject, name of site, and so on. Gives you a really nice presentation with crisp current photographs, history, significance, protection status as well. We're also planning to put out in the course of this coming year an online catalogue of blue heritage plaques that have been put out by the city. There are more than 220 of those. So that will, add to this, public resource. And if I may, I'll just mention one other. In 2023, 2 years back, we launched a public art catalogue with close to 100 artworks, prominent statues and contemporary artworks of different kinds. And there's an awful lot there as well.
So the one that I've had a look at, Eric, it says here, Johannesburg Public Art Catalogue. Is that what you're mentioning? Is that what you just mentioned now?
That's the one.
Okay, so that one, it has all of the statues and paintings or whatever and all sorts of things, and as you say, a really nice explanation. So if you just Google Johannesburg Public Art Catalog, you can actually go and find it. The Heritage Catalog, Eric, how does one find that?
It's much the same. So Johannesburg Heritage Register. So both of these are sitting on the website for our directorate, City of Joburg, Directorate of Arts, Culture and Heritage. We've got a Facebook page, and there's a link for public art, there's a link for heritage that'll give you one or other of those, yeah.
Okay, so if you go and it's HTTPS, whatever, arts-culture-heritage.joburg, and you can see both of these, and really well worth spending your time. I had a lot of fun looking at it, looking up things, understanding, even statues that you see sort of regularly, you don't know who the artist is or why was the statue made. It has all of that info there. So I think that that's a really good resource and one which people should be having a look at. It's got over 90 historic sites that have been recorded, and hopefully it can continue to grow. So that is a really great way, if you want to understand the heritage of the city, to engage with it. And I did want to ask you, Eric, the Jewish community, you mentioned Temple Israel, which is a fantastic building. If you haven't been, it's really worth seeing. But the Jewish community has been in the city really since its inception, which is unusual for an urban space. Mostly Jews came to urban spaces, and so I wonder, from a public art perspective or from buildings, if there's any other suggestions that our community might find interesting in terms of that.
Okay, so there are various buildings with Jewish associations. I mean, the Temple Israel would be the most obvious one, and the architect was Kallenbach, or his firm. Public artworks you would find, just to give you a few examples, maybe of Jewish artists. Near the Anglo-American buildings on Main Street, you've got the Leaping Impala. It's also called Impala Stampede by Herman Vault, which is this cascade of 17 leaping buck in flight, you know. Glorious artwork. One, it's absolutely iconic as a Joburg artwork. Here and there, you've got work also by Ernest Ullmann outside the Joburg Theatre in Braamfontein. You have a bronze with a water feature of dancing ladies, a modernist kind of artwork. So those are a few examples. Oh, the other one that I think is very, very cool and deserves more attention is what they call the Weinberg Family Monument. It's in a park in Savoy, just off Louis Botha. Used to be called the Savoy Park. It's now called the Weinberg Family Park. And it's a tribute to Elie Weinberg and his family of anti-apartheid activists, his wife Violet and their children. There was Sheila, was also a prominent activist. So Elie was a portrait photographer who took many of the great struggle photos from around the 50s, you know. The artwork kind of, it shows an old-style camera and an amazing family portrait, a mosaic. So those are just a few from the catalogue, yeah.
We're talking to Eric Eckstein today about a heritage in Johannesburg. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. Wrapping up today's discussion about heritage with Eric Eckstein, who came and on the show from the Joburg Heritage Directorate. Eric, just as we wrap up on the show today, if people, obviously we can get more information on the public art and heritage, but if people want to report something, let you guys know about it, you know, get more information, what is the best way that they can do that?
Okay, so I do answer public inquiries, and people can contact me directly. I'm happy to give my email address. So it's people want to make a note. Eric, Eric, @joburg.org.za.
Okay, fine. Eric, @joburg.org.za. Also, go check out those resources. Once again, I can tell you, Eric, people are already messaging in saying that they've got different heritage questions. So you've definitely sparked a conversation. So thank you so much for joining us. Again, if you want to check out those resources that you can see, of which there are a number, you can go check it out and see what there is of all the different heritage. I'm just getting the address here, arts-culture-heritage, that's arts-culture-heritage.joburg, and you can see the different directories. And if you want to get a hold of Eric, it's eric@joburg.org.za, and he'll be, I'm sure, very happy to take any of your queries. Eric, thank you so much for joining us again and for the work that you do, and have a good Heritage Month.
Okay, same to you and everybody. Thanks. Cheers, Benji.
Bye-bye. There we go. That is Eric Eckstein there. Hope that you enjoyed the discussion about heritage on the show today. And actually, that park that he mentioned, that Eric Weinberg Park, I was there over Shabbos, and if you are in Savoy, it's actually a really lovely monument because it's sort of interactive. You can kind of look through a camera, and then you can see the picture of the Weinbergs, who were these anti-apartheid activists. So, as a piece of public art, I think it is actually quite a cool one. And if you have kids or whatever, that's a little bit like fun. It's kind of interactive. So, that is that is that. And hopefully by looking at these art directories and heritage directories, we can also understand a little bit more about the nature of our city and how it functions in terms of its heritage. So I hope that you did enjoy that and learnt a little bit, because I certainly did, about the heritage of our city. And it certainly brings us to the end of the show for today. I am Benji Shulman. Thank you to the whole team who helps put everything together. We have Craig, who pushes, of course, all the big red buttons. Vusi, who is on the sound and assists us with making sure that everything works really well and the podcasts are up and everything goes like that. And of course, one of the ways in which spring is important in the city is that the public pools are open, and I'm sure a number of them are. So go out there and have a swim for spring. A spring swim, it certainly is not a terrible idea. But in the meantime, we will bid you adieu and see you next week on the New Blue Review.